I'll tell you what to do. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number, and we do also have a toll-free line. That means the call's on us if it would be long distance, and that is 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Glad to have you here once again.
Glad to be here.
We have some folks starting to get lined up, and we'll just get right at it. The first caller is in Urbana, and line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have very teeny tiny little ants. I think they're sweet ants. They get worse when it rains outside. I don't have them all winter. The minute it warms up, I have them. They might also be grease ants. I seem to be able to keep them under control, but I never can get rid of them.
What happens many times this time of year is that ants will come in because the heat of the house is warming up a nest that's near the foundation or underneath the house, and they get warmed up and the soil gets above 50 degrees and they start looking for places to go and they follow the heat and that comes up into the house. Many times, no matter what you do, these things will disappear after about a month because as it warms up outside, they'll figure out that there's better food outside and they'll go out there. But you can normally take care of them with baits inside the house in the areas where you find them. Probably the best bait to try would be combat ant bait. This will be either a hydromethylon or a fipronil bait, depending on which one you buy. But either one of them should be fine. Combat ant bait, like you're fighting somebody, combat.
And I get it somewhere like a Line A Peskin?
You get that at most hardware stores, even many grocery stores. And very common. That's going to be if they're going after protein, which is primarily what they'll be going after this time of year, or the so-called grease feeding. They'll go after protein this time of year because they're increasing the amount of individuals in their nest, and the larvae feed on protein, and they'll be attracted to that bait. If they don't come to that, try sweet bait, and that's going to be either Terro ant bait, T-E-R-R-O, or Grant's ant bait. And these will have boric acid as a toxicant in it. And that works better usually later in the season in the summertime or in the fall when they're not increasing the number of individuals in a colony and they're looking at adult food, which is going to be sugar or sweet type materials. So try the combat first at this time of year, and if it doesn't work, switch over to the Grants or Terro.
Okay, thanks so much.
Right, you're welcome.
So, you know, I think that somehow maybe we have this idea that the ants either like there are a particular kind of ant, either likes one or the other, but you're saying, well, and that's a really...
It depends what they're doing at that time of the year in their colony. There are some ants that will tend to lean more towards one type of food over another when they're coming inside, but it's more a case of what they're doing in the nest. They have legless larvae in their colony, which are predatory. They feed on on dead insects and so on that the worker ants will bring them, and are sometimes referred to as kind of the stomach of a colony. They will eat that material, whereas the adult ants feed on liquid food and are more interested in sweets. But the colony is made up primarily of workers that are going to gather whatever the colony needs at that particular time. And typically what you have is, just like any economic situation, you're ahead to go through the winter when you have to rely on stored food primarily, having a relatively small population of individuals. And then in the spring, as food becomes more plentiful, your best thing to do is to pump up your numbers. And so they will do this by the queen starting to lay eggs more, and they'll have larvae feeding in the nest, a lot of them. And they're going to need a lot of protein to grow up. And then as you get later in the season, say latter part of the summer into the fall, they're actually going to stop reproducing, having as many larvae in the nest. They're going to end up with primarily feeding the adults they have and laying in as much food as they can to get through the winter on. And so they'll go to primarily sweets because that's adult food, not the larval food. So it just depends. And then earlier in the summer or late spring, it just depends what that particular colony is doing. But typically in the early spring like this, they're raising larvae and they're going after protein.
Yeah, okay. The next caller is in Mattoon, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I've got a few questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'll keep them brief. I've got a birch tree out front that gets eaten up by these greenish beetles every year. It doesn't seem to affect any other trees that I have, but this birch tree really suffers from it. I think I've heard them called Japanese beetles, and I just wanted to know, when do you treat the tree and how do you treat the tree? And then second, I have a peach tree in the backyard that I believe has termites, and that's what my neighbor and I both determined, in the middle of it. And apparently fruit trees are susceptible to termites. What do you recommend for that?
Okay. With the Japanese beetles first, those will show up towards the end of June, the first, probably the last week of June or the third week in June. And there is a treatment that can be put down into the soil called imidacloprid. You can buy it as Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Control in hardware stores and garden centers. But that really ideally needed to be applied about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, by the end of April. You could still apply that. It's applied to the soil, to bare soil. Don't put it over mulch. If you have mulch around a tree, pull it back. If you have grass around a tree, pull it back. And this will protect a tree for the season. Otherwise, you can wait until the beetles come onto the trees, and then you're looking at sprays about every 2 weeks of carbaryl, which is sold as 7, or any of the pyrethroids. The most common one that's the most effective is going to be cyfluthrin, which will be sold as Bayer Advanced Multi-Insect Control. So the beetles are typically out till about from about the latter part of June to about the middle of August, so you're looking at about 3 sprays for that. You can hand-pick the beetles, but on birch tree they're probably too high up to be able to do that because they'll feed at the top of trees primarily. The trying to think now what the second question was.
Termites.
Termites, okay. Yeah, in the peach tree. Generally, you can get termites will feed on dead parts of a tree, and pretty much any tree in the center part of it is dead up the trunk, as well as you'll have dead roots and so on, which the termites will commonly get into. If it's a bearing peach tree, we normally don't recommend any control for that. The trees are not real long-lived to start with, and usually if you can get one, they don't normally are going to be very productive, much more than 20 years or so in this part of the state, less so farther north. And so you may be ahead to look at a new area to start a new new tree. So you've got termites in it. It's probably an indication that you've got a lot of dead wood associated with that tree and feeding on it. But I don't know of anything you can apply to termites that you can then be then it would be necessarily be safe to be consuming the fruit associated with it on a peach.
Should I worry about the termites migrating to other areas, or I mean?
That's a heck if you do, heck if you don't scenario. One idea is you can look at it from a standpoint that if you get rid of the termites are coming to the tree from a colony which is elsewhere in the soil, and if you block off that source of food to the termites, they're going to look harder in other places and they find your house. If you don't do anything about it, that keeps the termite colony alive and healthy so that they may build up in numbers and look for other places and may find your house. So no matter how you look at it, you can lose on termites. So it's whatever you feel about it. If it bothers you that the termites are there and it keeps you awake at night, you're ahead to treat them and probably not use any of the peaches that might form on the tree or cut the tree down and treat that area. On the other hand, doing nothing but having your house inspected on an annual basis would be a good idea, because probably if the termites are in a tree in your yard, they're probably close enough to attack the house. Certainly within the typical size of a couple city lots, they will migrate that far easily. So unless you've got a very large yard, the termites are probably close enough to attack your house, and you should be looking at annual inspections to be so you can be on top of that if it does occur.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go on again. This is another caller here, and in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of questions. You mentioned ants earlier. Would your recommendations vary at all for outdoor ants? I have a couple of anthills, a couple of collections of anthills, actually.
Well, outdoor ants we primarily look at as being beneficial. They till the soil more than the earthworms in a typical yard, helping recycle nutrients, make your plants grow better, all of that neat stuff.
Okay.
So they're actually beneficial.
Okay.
However, if you have a very large anthill, something that the mower hits and kills the mower on and so on,
yeah.
We'll recommend opening the top of an anthill and treat it with permethrin, which
okay.
you'll find as 8 Insect Control or various other brand names, but it would be permethrin in the active ingredients statement.
Okay.
And you would apply that, open the anthill, the surface up, and a couple of shovelfuls of soil out, and then soak the soil with the ants there.
Okay.
Probably within about 6 weeks to 2 months, you'll have another anthill there, but it'll probably be a different species of ant that won't make such an obnoxious anthill, and you can live with it better. So that's
okay.
kind of the way we look at it there. But generally, ants in the yard, you allow to remain there. We have 90 different species of ants in Illinois, so there's a good chance that whatever comes back in, which will come back in, will be something else that won't be a problem.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've got about a half dozen of those species around, because I've got those two in the yard, which I've let go for several years.
Okay.
Such that now that they're pretty big and tall.
But yeah.
Then I also have a couple that are in a couple different, probably two colonies that are at the border between the garage and the driveway.
Okay. Yeah, if they're very large anthills and cause some problems other than just being a nuisance, then, yeah, treat something. But we don't recommend generally treating ants in the yard because
okay.
they're not really hurting anything except the appearance a little bit.
Okay.
And the other side of it is that the ants are so ubiquitous that they
right.
will come back in and recolonize, and you'll just be treating forever, and when you could have just had the same number of ants and done nothing.
Sure, I just figured they're re-landscaping. They're giving my...
Yeah, exactly. They're tilling that soil. They're recycling nutrients. They're breaking things down. They're putting oxygen down in the soil. They're helping water incorporate into the soil better. All those neat things that help your plants grow.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll stop kicking them.
And then every once in a while they kill a harmful insect for you, so
yeah.
They're always good.
Yeah, I do like the beneficial insects, which is why I'm kind of sad. I think I've killed some of my indoor spiders, which were helping to combat my overwhelming carpet beetle
okay.
infestation.
Yeah, well, that's you've got to get on top of anything that's got animal fibers in it, wool
yeah.
or felt or down or this sort of thing. And other than that, if you live in an older house, there'll be a few feeding all along in the baseboards on the pea flakes of skin and hair that falls off of our body that makes up house dust. And,
yeah.
And there's not much you can do about that unless you want to just seal them inside the wall with some caulking compound along that baseboard.
Well, I've got two cats. Two birds and a dog, so we constantly
yeah.
have animal stuff around.
Yeah, that along with the human dander is enough to do that pretty
Plus
good.
Clothes and furniture, so they've pretty much taken over the entire house, and it's. And I was wondering if you might recommend any kind of way I could cut them down chemically without.
Well, certainly any aerosol ant and roach spray along in cracks and crevices will help reduce the problem. And then, but usually they're going to be relatively minor unless you've got some sort of
massive
situation where they're getting into other fabrics and so on. And that's
they're in fabrics. They're
okay,
between clothes. They're I regularly. Like when I get up in the morning, I see a half dozen on my bedspread.
Mm.
It's an overwhelming.
Well, in that situation, you need to. What we recommend primarily is to clean your woolen fabrics and down and so on when you're done using them for this season, which we're pretty much at, and then store in airtight containers that can be plastic garbage bags on the cheap side. And then if you want additional protection of the moth crystals or cedar shavings in folds of the clothing will help protect them even further. You have to remember to bring that out and let it air for 3 or 4 days before you wear it in the spring,
right.
in the fall. But that'll dissipate relatively quickly. That will add additional protection. if you, a cedar chest works well, but you has to have an airtight seal on it.
Right.
If you smell the cedar walking by the cedar chest, it's not doing you any
exactly.
good.
Exactly. So you wouldn't recommend any kind of fogger or anything?
The foggers aren't going to do a whole lot of good. These are feeding primarily in cracks and crevices. That's why I recommended the aerosol ant and roach sprays in cracks and crevices.
Okay.
And keep your pets away from it until it's
right.
dry.
Okay. And is there a preference for which chemical?
No, not really. There are going to be a variety of pyrethroids that are going to be in various brand name products, and either any of those are going to work pretty very well.
Okay.
It may be S-phenvalerate, it may be permethrin, it may be cyfluthrin, it may be a variety of other things, lambda-cyhalothrin. There's a whole bunch of stuff
sure.
that makes your tongue twist, but essentially an aerosol ant roach spray does the job, and it's going to be one of those types of products.
Okay, and all of them are safe once they're dry?
Once they're dry, they're relatively safe. Unless somebody's licking the surface, you're in pretty good shape.
Okay, I'll keep the dog away from licking them.
Yeah, well, it's normally they're not going to lick it if it's dry.
Right, okay, great. Thank you
all
so much for your help.
Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I and is here occasionally. We talk about dealing with insect pests around the home. Can be inside, outside. Tell us the problem, and he'll tell you what to do. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I certainly, in my yard, I've had occasional problems with ant colonies.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is, you know, they're doing their thing, but they also get the soil all sort of churned up and can kind of cause a mess. And I've wondered, if I went out there with a bucket and dug up as much of that soil as I could and moved them to another
uh-huh.
place and dumped it, now would they just end up coming back to the same place, or could I actually get them to move that?
They wouldn't necessarily come back to the same place, but what you've got you have to get to the queen, and the queen is the most protected individual in the colony, because if she dies, they all die, or at least the progeny. There's no future for the colony. There's one reproductive individual in most colonies. We have some that have multiple queens, but normally what you find in your typical anthill out in the yard is going to be a single queen colony. And so you've got to be very extensive on that digging. The other thing is that the future of the ants may not be all that good if you're looking at conservation of the ants somewhere else. Because just like when we trap other animals, such as mammals and so on, rabbits, raccoons, whatever, and move them, mm-hmm. we move them into territory that already has animals in that area of that same type. In other words, in this case, there already is ant colonies in that area. They're probably already there to capacity of the environment for food, and they're kind of have to make a new colony, find new food, and fight off neighboring anthills that are not going to appreciate them there. So the sum total of them is that they will probably die a slow, painful, slow death by moving them, just like unfortunately most of our bunnies and raccoons and so on that we move and translocate to somewhere else. They don't know where to find food. They don't know where to find shelter. And the others of their same species around there will pick on them. So they normally die a slow death of starvation and exposure. And unfortunately, that's probably what would happen in trying to move an ant colony.
All right. Well, again, this goes back to...
So that really tugs at your heartstrings. We'll make you feel sorry for the poor ants and what you're doing to them.
Well, not quite as sorry as I would feel for the cute bunnies and the raccoons.
But still.
I want to try and...
Yeah, translocating an animal of any type takes a tremendous amount of scientific expertise, and many times involves even removing some competition, which may mean some death of some of the animals that are there that might compete that aren't the same species. So it's not a pretty thing when you're moving animals to a new area. It's usually not – nature doesn't leave open spaces. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
there's always something there.
Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. We had some small flying insects that seemed to have taken residence in our flaxseed and whole wheat flour. We'd never seen insects like this before. They fly, as adults anyway. And we've thrown away all the grains that they've taken up residence in, but we want to know what kind of insect that might be.
Do they look like little moths or little beetles?
Yes, they look like little moths. They fly. They've got wings.
The most common one is going to be Indian meal moth, which is going to have about a 3/8-inch long body. It's about a half-inch wingspan, and when you see one that's pristine sitting somewhere, it'll be very slender, and the it'll look like it has a gray band across the center of a body. The end of the wings are reddish-brown, and the base of the wings is a dirty gray, dirty white to gray in color.
They look goldish. You know, we haven't used a magnifying glass.
Okay.
That little stripes are.
Well, they will look somewhat goldish-looking if they've been flying around a while and some of their scales have come off the wings.
And they die readily.
Yeah.
They fall into dishwater and things like that. So that's probably what that
Means. What it is. It could be there are other grain moths that, that it could be. But at any rate, the answer is the same, and that is that when you purchase your product, particularly if it comes from an area, a source that may not be being kept insect-free real well. In other words, where you buy them, they sell the materials in bulk. They don't have the refrigerated, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
First thing you want to do is freeze that material for at least 3 days.
Oh.
Okay.
And I suspect it's the whole wheat flour from Beachy's in Arthur.
They may be coming in that way. Yeah. A lot of your health food stores and so on now will sell their grains in it'll be in refrigerated cases, so to keep the bugs out of them.
Right.
But some of the old-fashioned types still have bins, and those are just smorgasbords for these type of insects.
That's probably.
And then you want to store once you've frozen your material for 3 days to kill whatever might have been in there that you bought with it. You want to store those products in airtight containers like Tupperware canisters, resealable coffee cans, glass jars, something like that.
Right.
And then vacuum out the cracks and crevices of your cabinet. Go through your cabinet, throw away anything that's infested. And they can get into sealed packages, you know, store sealing seals that you might get in packaging from a store.
Yeah.
But that should get rid of them. You may see moths for 4 to 6 weeks, but they should should reduce in number to where they disappear.
Great.
Sanitation is a real answer in doing this. Mm-hmm. Whether you're organically minded or not, the answer is still the same. We don't use insecticides on these insects. We go after their source and keep them from getting into it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right,
you're
very
welcome.
Good. We're at our midpoint here. And again, questions on insect pest problems around the home. That's what we're doing here this morning with Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I, and every once in a while he's here to answer these kinds of questions. So could be something in the house, could be something in the yard. Just tell us what it is, and he'll tell you what to do. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Lawrence County, line 4. Here, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question about an infestation of flies in our basement. They've been there 3 or 4 days. We can't figure out where they're coming from, and they tend to go to the window and stay there. They're kind of lethargic. They're about twice the size of a house fly.
Okay, kind of big and black?
Yep.
Okay. These are probably blowflies, and you probably have a dead mouse or some other creature in your basement or in a wall void, and that's where they're able to get down to, although flies tend to climb up to get out of things. So to be in the basement means that probably the cadaver is somewhere in your basement. A mouse will produce probably of these large ones probably somewhere around 40 or 50, 60 of these flies before all the flesh is eaten away to skeleton and the flies will disappear. The good answer on this is that this is a self-limiting problem. As the flies develop on the dead flesh, they will run out of what their food is and they will disappear on their own. They're going to the window because in their interest in getting out and finding other flies to mate with and reproducing. So that's why you find them at the windows, and they could be coming from anywhere in the basement or even possibly other places in the house. Generally, all you need to do is just ride it out and then try to, if this becomes a recurring problem, then each spring or something of this nature, then you need to be probably mouse-proofing or otherwise animal-proofing your house a little better to keep things from getting in and dying inside your house.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Right,
very good. And the next caller here is line number two. The caller is in Oakwood. Hello.
Hey there. Good morning.
Hi.
Got a question. Had the ortho man out here a while ago with cockroaches.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is, he said he didn't want to put mulch or rock around outside the house for landscaping right next to the house because they love to get under that and then, of course, work their way into the house.
Well, it depends which kind of mat roach you're looking at. If it's German cockroaches, which are about a half an inch long and brown as adults, that's not the case. If they're Oriental cockroaches, which are about an inch and a quarter long and very dark brown, reddish, dark reddish brown, they can survive around the outside foundation, but they primarily live inside. If what you're looking at is primarily wood roaches, which will look very much like Oriental cockroaches, in fact, but you'll have adults, which will be about an inch and a quarter long and fly, those individuals will be attracted, are coming primarily from dead, decaying trees and so on in the area. They could be more numerous if you have a lot of mulches next to your house, but they're more apt to come from something that has more reliable moisture and damp area and decaying wood areas, such as a forest area, than next to your house, although it could add to the problem a little bit.
So wood mulch would probably not be a good idea.
Wood mulch is probably not necessarily the best thing, or any type of mulch next to your house, because you end up getting various creatures such as crickets and other things that will feed on that material and come into your house, earwigs and so on. Or you can also get spiders, centipedes, and so on that feed on those critters that eat that mulch and come into your house. So generally, having organic mulch next to your foundation is not a good idea in helping keep bugs in general out of your house. Certainly, 10, 15, 20 feet away or more in various landscape beds is fine, but not against a house is not something we normally recommend. If you do use wood mulch, we recommend that you have it no more than an inch to 2 inches thick, so deep, so that you end up, the wood mulch dries out from time to time, and this reduces the number of insects as well, roaches and other insects that might be associated with that.
All right, so it looks like pea gravel, here we come.
Yeah, it might be a good idea, but like I said, if you keep the wood mulch thin to where it's not more than, say, an inch or two deep, probably it's not going to really increase the amount of roaches or other critters that are going to come into your house all that much.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Onarga on line three. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because we have, we're eagerly not anticipating an infestation from a type of wasp that seems to be around our home. My husband calls them cicada killers.
Okay. That's very likely what they are.
Well, and they are, I mean, they're thick. We have hundreds of them now. We started out with a small infestation and some planters out in front of the house. They've now worked around the front of our home. They dig right down next to our foundation to the point where they're heaving up huge mounds by the end of every summer. And their population has definitely increased. And we want to know what we can do to get rid of these guys. He's tried different types of commercial insecticides, and like he says, all it does is make them mad. You know, they don't sting us or our pets, but they are huge, you know, to look at. They frighten a lot of people. It's not pleasant to sit outside with these guys. And as I said, they're next to our foundation of our house. We want to know, we've heard different people have told us, oh, you're just going to have to dig out all the soil and get down and get all their colonies out of there. So is there something else that we could do besides kind of unearthing the house?
I doubt that would probably help a whole lot myself, so that would make you feel a little bit better in one way. But the cicada killers, for those people who don't know what we're talking about, are an inch and a half, 2 inch long wasps, which tend to show up typically around the middle of June and are present for about 6 weeks. They will tunnel down into the soil. They'll make about quarter inch to half inch diameter holes. You'll have loose soil next to that opening. They have a tendency to, although they can sting, the ones that go into the holes can sting. You normally have to step on one barefoot or grab a hold of it barehanded to get stung. They're very reluctant to sting. Those that buzz around and are more of a nuisance and scare people more are males that establish aerial territories. And because the stinger on a bee or wasp is a modified egg-laying device, males don't have the equipment. So they cannot sting at all, even though they look just as ferocious and sound just as bad. So they're really somewhat of a paper tiger. Generally, they like open areas to nest in more than others, and so many times by getting good vegetation cover, you reduce it, but that won't eliminate it completely, but it will greatly reduce the number, typically. That's one thing you can do. The other thing is that you can, if it stays in an area, typically these are out in the summer where we don't get a whole lot of rainfall, you can put carbaryl, so it is 7, dust in and around the opening to where as the boss goes in and out, it will pick this up on her hairs of her body and her grooming. She will ingest the insecticide and it will kill her. Once the females are gone, the males will go somewhere else where there's more action to be had, and they will tend to disappear. So you can put 7 dust around the openings, but again, these are not normally going to be harmful, except in our own mind's eye. And if you can live with them, that's a better way. But I understand what you're talking about. I had probably about 15 to 20 of them alongside my back walk all last year. They are a native insect. And as most native insects, their numbers will rise and fall due to climatic and, more importantly, their own predators and parasites. And we've had them now for 2 to 3 years. Typically, a native insect will be very numerous for about 3 years and then drop in numbers for probably 6 to 8 years. So they may be very numerous this year, but I'd be very surprised if they're going to be that numerous in 2009, if their pattern holds with what other native insects will go through. Every creature has its own little diseases and predators and parasites and so on. And generally, when they've been very numerous, like these have been for this long, for a couple, 3 years, generally they're probably kind of at the point to where the things that feed on them are probably got to get the upper hand on them for a while.
Okay.
So there may be something. You may not have as many, even if you do nothing. I bet you don't have as many next year if you do nothing. So that may give you something to hold on to.
Some hope
yeah.
for no more
all right. But if you dug out all of the nests and just left the soil there, you know, you would have good territory for more to move in. So that would be very short term. That's why I don't think digging out the nests would make a whole lot of difference. And those nests are usually at least 8 inches down. So you got to dig considerable amount to get to them. And it's one of those things, if you build it, they will come. If you happen to have the type of conditions the cicada killers will do well in, sooner or later, more will find you and you'll have them back.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We, you know, May Barenbaum was on the show last week, and we had someone call in and also ask about cicada killers, and she was saying essentially sort of the same thing, that if it was going to be, if it had been one or two, she could cope with that.
Yeah.
But that she had a lot of them, and that they were in her lawn, and that they were causing all kinds of damage because of the digging.
Yeah, in my yard, they'll get a couple, 3 of them near each other, and you'll get an area that's maybe 6 inches across and mound up 2 or 3 inches. So, yeah, it becomes something pretty noticeable.
Yeah. All right. Peoria is the next caller, and that's line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
How coincidental that you should be on today. But this happened last night, and the bugs are kind of tame, but they have long wings. And I've never had that before, and it seemed to and abundant. I don't know where they came from. And all of a sudden, at night.
Okay.
So what are they? They have long wings.
Okay, how big are they? About a quarter of an inch?
Yes.
And do the wings stick out well past the body of the insect, or just kind of end towards the end of the body?
No, way past the body.
Okay, so the body itself is more like maybe a 16th or an eighth of an inch long, and then the wings stick way out behind?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, and these are on your windows?
No, on the floor.
Okay. Okay. And do the wings kind of glisten and reflect light?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Okay. You might want to collect some of those and send those to your local extension office for identification. At first glance, it sounds like you have winged termites in your house, which means that you probably have termite infestation in your house. So many times, more commonly, we'll get ants, but ants, the wings will only extend just slightly past a body, not way past a body, and they will have a pinched-in waist like an hourglass, like a typical ant has. Winged termites have wings that stick way past their body, usually at least as long as the body is itself long, and they do not have a pinched-in waist. And, again, they're about a quarter of an inch long. So that's something that you should probably act on and collect some and get them identified to find out what they are, because it sounds suspiciously like termites. Most termites swarm in the spring. They start around late winter into spring. They start usually in late February and extend their swarming through much of May. So we're in the time when swarming could be occurring. And if you have swarm winged individuals, a swarm emerge in your house, that's an indication that although they may not be attacking their house, they're certainly close enough to attack your house.
Oh, my.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
And termite treatment is a professional job, so you're going to need to contact a couple, three professional pest control companies and have them do bids on what's going to be involved.
I live in a condo, so I should call the manager.
Yeah, you need to talk to the condo association, yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right.
Much.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. And we'll talk with someone next in, Muhammad, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This is a pretty common thing. We have a crawl space under our house, and I know there are a few roaches down there. And once or twice a year, one will come up through the walls, and I'll see it in the house. But how can I prevent that? I know some companies want to put a bait out, but I'm afraid, being in a crawl space, which is open to the outside in various places, that I'll get more roaches with a bait. So
first, the baits will typically be housed in a protective station to where other creatures other than insects can't get in there. So you don't have to worry about secondary poisoning of other creatures. The bait is going to be just attractive to on a short distance, so you're not going to attract them from a ways into your place. But if you only see one or two a year, and chances are, and they're kind of dark brown and up to about an inch and a quarter long, and kind of flattish looking, they're probably wood roaches. And they are not a threat to maintain in your house. They need they're a native roach, and native roaches need cold winters and a lot of moisture. And we just, quite frankly, keep our houses too warm in the winter for them to live in our houses. But roaches that are a problem becoming in our houses are actually originally from Africa. We think probably the Rift Valley of Kenya, which, evolutionarily, that's apparently where people came from. So they like our tropical conditions and do well in it. But if you only see an occasional one and you think that they're probably coming from a crawl space, chances are they're a wood roach and they're not anything to be concerned about. You remove them individually as you see them, which is a fancy way for saying you stomped the holy bejeebers out of them.
I sure do. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. You can always rely on Phil. He's going to give you the most high-level technical kind of stuff here.
We'll give you the highfalutin one, and then we'll tell you what to really do.
Phil Nixon is our guest. He's extension entomologist at the U of I. So if you have insect pest problems around the home, could be inside, could be outside, give us a call, 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, while we have a moment here, we don't have any callers. One of the things you said maybe it would be worth talking a little bit about is emerald ash borer.
Mm-hmm.
This is a serious issue on ash trees,
right.
Although you don't want to treat it if you actually don't have the problem.
Exactly, and that's what's most important to talk about is that emerald ash borer will probably eventually eliminate ash for all practical purposes in North America. But the point is, as best we know, we do not recommend preventative treatment or any other kind of treatment for your ash tree. There are insecticide treatments we don't recommend unless there have been emerald ash borers found within 15 miles of where you live. Now, that means that for the people that that are in the Chicago metro area that are hearing this program. They are all within 15 miles of Emerald Ash Borer because we have them in northern Southern Cup County and out in Kane County and in DuPage County, and it's going to be pretty much impossible to go 15 miles away from any Emerald Ash Borer. So they should be looking at treating their trees if they want to or realize that they may lose them eventually. Otherwise, preventive treatment is recommended. But in central Illinois and other parts of Illinois, outside of LaSalle, Peru area, we do not where we do have another infestation, we are not recommending preventative treatments of Emerald Ash Borer. And unfortunately, there are some people that are out there looking to find a quick buck that are recommending treatments of Emerald Ash Borer for Emerald Ash Borer ash trees throughout the state. And we do not recommend that. Research indicates that we can have as much as 40% dieback on the tree from Emerald Ash Borer and still be able to save a tree. So the idea that you've got to treat it because goodness knows it might be next door and I don't know, that's pushing it a considerable amount because once it is found, if it is found next door, you will have time to protect your tree. So don't go off the deep end and get yourself talked into having a tree treated or demand that your tree be treated when you're like most of central Illinois is, and that is at least 100 miles from the closest Emerald Ash Borer.
Okay. Several callers. As best we know.
Yeah, right.
And certainly it's the kind of thing where people are keeping an eye out for this.
Right. We're watching very closely for it. So I think there's a good chance of finding that you don't need to treat without knowing that it's in your area.
Well, given how quickly we know that they spread, let's say, when would you estimate that we might actually have Emerald Ash Borer in Champaign County?
Well, considering that it could get here, it will move easily on firewood. There's a very good chance that it's in here already. Mm-hmm. However, it's probably somewhere in central Illinois, but that means Quincy to Danville. Who knows where in central Illinois it is. There's a good chance that it is. However, but if you look at it finding its way on its own, we know that it travels a half mile, maybe a little more per year. The closest infestation is in the Homewood area that we know of Cook County, which is about 120 miles away, which theoretically would be 240 years before it would get here on its own. So I don't think you have to run out and have your tree treated. In fact, probably your great-grandchildren don't have to worry about it. But it could be very likely it will show up much sooner than that, and it will be spread by humans on firewood or other ways. But there's no need to decide that, well, it's in Cook County, so it's probably going to be here very quickly, not necessarily. If it has to get here on its own.
All right. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Yes, it's kind of a roundabout question about insects, but I have a lot of moles in my yard.
Uh-huh.
And I read somewhere that they feed on grubs.
Yes, but they primarily feed on earthworms.
On earthworm.
Uh-huh.
Oh, because I was hoping that it would be some way that if I killed the grubs, then I would eliminate the moles. But
years ago, we used to be able to treat for grubs and the moles would leave. But anymore, it doesn't happen that way. And I think the reason is the moles are feeding primarily on earthworms. 60-70% of their diet is earthworms. And B, what we have out there for controlling grubs don't stink as bad as the things we used to have that are now off of market. And in my opinion, when we treated for grubs, we stunk them out of our yard from the chemical we put down. We didn't drive them out because we killed their grubs. Because the materials that we use today work much better, like half again better at killing grubs than what we had years ago when it used to get to flush the moles out of the yard. So we do not recommend treatment for grubs to control moles. What we do recommend are traps placed along straight portions of a tunnel, or you can use also a toxicant called talparid, which is available in garden centers. And the talparid comes as a little tiny, looks like a little worm that you put into the tunnel, the straight line tunnels of a mole. The mole will feed on it, and it will kill the individual mole. We do not recommend treatment for white grubs.
Thank you very much. You answered my question.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
How effective are they, I might ask, these these treatments?
Vitalpared are very effective. That's what the professionals use.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Mm-hmm. Back here to our local area here, and the next caller's in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I was wondering about the last, I'd say, 3 years I've had, whenever it gets rainy in the spring, I get these little itty-bitty black ants in my bathroom only, and they seem to come up the pipes or something, and I put out these little ant, poisons, traps, those kinds of things. And I was wondering, even when I do that, they still come back, not as much as before. And I have a bathroom upstairs, and they have even attacked that bathroom.
Yeah,
What
you need to look at are using the right baits, and we recommend the Combat brand ant baits, or if that doesn't seem to be attractive to them, then either Grant's ant bait or Taro ant bait. There are a wide range of ant baits out there, some of which are more effective than others, and it's primarily due to the attractiveness of the bait product itself, the bait that lures them in, as well as how well the toxicant works. But all of these have toxicants in them, insecticides that are slow acting, meaning that they will carry it back and will, if they come heavy enough, it will kill off a colony. So Combat ant bait, if that doesn't work, try Grant's or Taro. And see if that doesn't work. You may be using another brand which is not as effective.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very good. Line two is next in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I have something in my house. I have two small children and a dog, and myself and my husband, and we are all scared of them. I think that they're called house centipedes.
Okay. Run like grease lightning and look like they're got legs, long legs everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, they're not what I would have thought looked like a normal centipede. They look really hairy and scary, and they're fast, and do they bite, and do they hurt people, and how do you get rid of them?
They can bite, but you'd have to grab a hold of one, and they move so fast that your chances of catching one are almost nil. These insect relatives are get up to about an inch and a half long for those people who haven't had the pleasure, and they have legs that stick out way a long ways on the side of their body, probably about a half an inch long legs, and they move very, very quickly. Aerosol ant and roach sprays around in cracks and crevices will reduce or eliminate them. They're not dangerous. They are feeding on insects that are in the house, and reducing the moisture will greatly reduce them as well. Normally you find them in a bathroom or in the basement, and you may need to look at perhaps using ventilation fans more in the bathroom or a dehumidifier in the basement will help tremendously to get rid of them.
Okay. Did you say roach spray?
Aerosol ant and roach spray, uh-huh.
Aerosol ant and roach spray. And is that harmful to my dog or my children,
though? Not once it's dry.
Not once it's dry.
You want to keep them away while it's still damp, and it usually dries within an hour or two.
Okay.
And you would
said these do bite.
You would apply that along baseboards, cracks, and crevices. Yes, they can, but it's almost unknown for a person to bit or a dog to get bitten by one, because first you got to be fast enough to catch it. It only bites in self-defense.
So it wouldn't climb in bed with my children.
No.
And
no.
Bite.
No.
Okay. Nope. Okay. Sorry, I'm just a paranoid.
That's okay.
And they are terrible looking. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Right.
Thank you. I think we have another caller. We have gone up to line number three for another call. I think this is Champaign. Hello. Maybe not Champaign. Line three?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. We have a problem in the sink in the bathroom around the sinks. The counter, when we come in the morning, the counter is often not covered, but there may be 10, 15, 20, 30 little pinhead crawling things.
Do they jump?
Pardon me?
Do they jump?
No, they do not jump.
Okay.
They don't fly. What do we do to get rid of them?
Probably they're there in that location because of moisture associated with the sink. You may want to check to see if you've got any leaks around the baseboard, the splashboard, underneath the sink. Look for any leaks. Usually small insects like that are probably going to be associated with moisture and the molds and mildews that they produce. That may solve a problem easier than about anything else and more permanently than anything else. But other than that, if that doesn't seem to fit, you may want to
may want to take or send a specimen to your local extension office to see if they can figure out what it is and so we can address it more directly.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Well, we're just about the point we have to finish up. Maybe we have about a minute or 30 seconds. Any last thing that you want to mention?
Well, we do have buffalo gnats, which are out around, or some people will call them black flies, particularly in the central part of the state. We get them in the Chicago area as well. They are not controlled easily by repelled by insecticides, including DEET repellents such as cutters or off. Head nets may be involved needing that. They fly when it's sunny, and they won't bite through clothing, so be aware of that and protect birds. We've had last year in central Illinois, we had a bunch of chickens, even some emus killed, bluebirds inside nest boxes killed. But generally, if you've got chickens or other birds, getting them in inside with some screens on the windows to help reduce the number of black flies or buffalo gnats that get in will help protect them. They'll be around for about a month.
All right. And in the meantime, you have insect questions, call your local extension office.
And if they can't figure it out, they get a hold of me.
They get a hold of this guy, Phil Nixon. He's extension entomologist at the U of I. Every once in a while he's here, we talk about insect problems around the house. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.